The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
We interrupt this program for no reason. Had there been a reason, you'd have been asked to go along with it and perhaps even take off your pants. But there is no reason, so now we return you to the program.
Okay, let me see here. Let me put this all into perspective. We started this program tonight listening to Frank Cotolo do his fine radio broadcast from amcast.com.
It was far out, though. Was that not far out?
Appreciate this. Calling in tonight.
What we did. You heard what we did. I didn't even think we could do that.
We had everything from me hosting the Dez show tonight. Can you believe that? I was hosting the Dez show.
So that's what we did. We had both of them. He didn't know if he could have put on another... And I don't know why he couldn't. If he could have put on another player and picked up me the way I was picking up him, then it would have went back and forth. It would have been super freak.
Frank going, and I gave him breakdown, play by play.
What I'm doing?
I don't have to speak perfect English all the time. Shit.
You don't speak it any time.
Okay, things are happening. I am back online.
Of course you're online. We're with you, pal. We're with you. Listen to the story about a man named Dez. Poor big jerk barely kept his family fed.
Go ahead and address Fast Blast before I move on.
Oh, Fast Blast my ass.
Okay, the chat room is up and running.
We're all there with you.
Do you mind?
The Frank is on.
You're kidding. The donut lady has other stuff too. The donut lady has napkins.
I'm scared as hell.
And now, on with the show.
Now?
From...
Song was written by Fred Ebb and John Candy.
Shut up! I'm talking now, Frank. Let's sing this together, you and me.
Don Costa. And stolen.
He's dead too. Move on.
Start spreading the news.
This is dedicated to my hometown.
I am leaving today.
But not quick enough.
I want to be a part.
Oh, got it. I can make sure I...
New York.
Oh, he's going to improvise.
Yes, he's the vagabond.
Vagabond Lou.
They are longing to stray.
You got a live version here, and he's got this thing in his voice.
I am. The very heart of it.
I go like
New York. I want to wake up in a city that never sleeps. And find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. My little town blue.
Come on, everybody, you know the words.
They are melting away.
Melting away.
I'm gonna make a brand new start of it in old New York. And if I can.
Make it there.
I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you.
Yeah, that's you. Hold on there.
New
York. Hold on there.
I come back.
They're here, both of them. Hold on there.
Yes, we're both here, and we're going to stay here.
That's Spitola over there. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I know. That's him. That's Savino over there. You know what I mean? Hold on. Just stay
here. Yeah,
right.
That's Savino over there.
Here we go, neo-postmodernists. Another one of those collector's items. Savino Cotolo Chronicles, The Bards of Broadcasting. You could be a bard too, Tom.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks. Sunbird Sickleman, come on. Hey, come on in here. We got Savino Cotolo Chronicles here, and we're going to go all the way tonight. Wake up. It's night, my friends. Hopefully I'm going to get my wireless back. And this is weird. Oh, well, I'll explain this later. Anyway, put on your rye straw hats and your high heel sneakers. Here we go. Once again down the Hallelujah Trail. I love that you can... I can see you and you can't see me. It's great. Once the boiler kicks on again, we're actually going to be able to... How much longer do we have? I don't know, but I'll explain it in a second. Let's see if we can do it. Oh, I think we're going to be all right here. Come on. Stay with us, everybody. 2 hours of this and more. I mean, and more than you can... It goes real quickly, as you know. I got to turn this whole on. Stay with it. Tom, get ready to talk for a little bit. I've got a mechanical thing here. Here's Tom Savino. Oh, yeah, he's coming in. Hey, it worked. Wow. That is such a trial. You have no idea, Tom, what I go through here, because this is like analog connected to digital. I got wireless stuff, and believe it or not, as advanced as all the technology has become in order to be able to do this and do these marvelous things, you there, me here, people looking at each other, as amazing as that might be, when a couple of minutes before my boiler is going to kick on, the wireless shuts down.
Oh, wow.
And and what's going... See, there's a little static in the air right there. Oh, yeah. Well, still, from ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to sea, from Othello and Tyrone Bordello, here we are again on this Y2K plus 13 in the middle of May. And Mr. Tom Savino, as I mentioned... And wrote and blogged and tweeted and Facebooked and is here with me. See, you know, do you hear that? Do you hear the static?
Me?
Yeah.
You're talking to me?
Do you hear
static? Actually, no, I don't. Mm.
I could put... that's fine. Here, wait, be quiet for a second. Let's see if I could up the volume here. You hear that? No, maybe you don't hear it on that end. And they're not hearing it out there. I hope you've all gone to... CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. Ah, it's on again. See now? The boiler just kicked on, so we're safe. And I saved it from a catastrophe. And I did the one thing you shouldn't do. I brought attention to the problem. But, you know, we're all here.
Oh, what the hell?
Yeah, we're all here. We're all together.
You're probably one of those bohemian guys.
I'm a beau. I'm a beau. How you doing, Tom?
I'm okay. You know, I agree to speak on this subject, perhaps a bit prematurely. As the time was coming close to the show, I said, I don't know too much about this stuff.
Well, you know, I forgot to play something in the collage, too. I guess that's because I got all confused. I had a bohemian right here talking. But you don't know too much? What is there to know? We know we're going to talk about... about, you know, where have all the bohemians gone? There was an article. It came from a book, the idea.
Uh-huh.
And the book is called, I'm going to find this right now, By the way, everyone, stay with us. Let me just do a couple of these things here first. We hope you got your, if you got your Android or your BlackBerry or your Boysenberry or your iPhone, iPads, or ibuprofens, you go to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com and get the app so that you could be listening to this as you're walking around. What better experience could you imagine? but listening to this as you walk around, you won't have to download it later because we're live right here, thanks to SRN Media Works and our fabulous York region in Canada. So here we are again. Now, what was I going to do? Oh, there's this article that I sent you, and I realize, and you know, don't worry because it's like we say, Tom, to everybody here, I'm looking for it now. I could open another tab. I never rehearse, but I'm always prepared. So you're prepared.
Well, I know that.
Well, yeah. Having worked with me, actually. But hold on. Yeah, let's see. Okay, here we go. Now this is going to be easy. But we'll get into this. Everyone knows we could just go right into this. Okay, everyone, because everyone is listening. And it's just you and me tonight. We have no in-house guests, no people sitting around here. It's just us.
Uh-huh.
And that's fine with me. Okay. Oh, but Norma Simi is online, though. I'm
Norma?
Norma Simi is online. Yeah, I'm on my. She just got onto Skype, and that's how she talks to all her relatives in San Salvador.
Wow. I mean, that's wild.
That's
considering, you know, I mean, I often think about Norma and Dom. You know, I haven't been in touch with them for a long time, but
Dom's been on the show.
Oh, yes? Okay,
yeah,
great.
We've talked about, you know, days in crazy junior high school and stuff and all that junk. So he's been here and there. They live in Florida.
You know, I mean, I used to date Norma for, we went on a couple of dates.
Yeah.
And then he married her later. And it's a strange thing. In a way, I don't know why, but I think of it as this.
Well, imagine all the people listening who really have no idea who we're talking about. Imagine talking about strange things. They don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, actually, either. That's, you know, it's a little maybe too personal. There's nothing too personal on this show.
No, this is pretty much what we do here. It's the great one-on-one experience. Now it's 2-on-1, which of course is always more fun. And Tom and I, not Tom and me, right? Tom and I.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Well, it depends on where it is in the sentence. Tom and I are going to do something. It would be Tom and I.
And I end it, it's Tom and me, right?
Oh, if you're saying who's here?
You're here.
If you're saying, like, yes, it would be Tom and me.
See, that's it. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Because I has to, a verb has to follow I. Is that correct?
Are you
all right? It's 3 hours earlier there, for gosh sakes. Are you tired?
I'm burnt out.
Oh.
I'm really burnt out. It's we're coming up to the end of the semester.
Yes.
And
plenty of tests and things?
Well, actually, we just had weeks and weeks of tests, and the students are revolting. They've been revolting.
Now, wait a second.
What a revolting development! Yeah.
You use that. That had two meanings.
Yes. Yeah. They are definitely revolting.
They're not revolting. They're wonderful people.
You take it either way, but probably both ways they're revolting. Yeah. So it's I don't know. It's getting. I'm, you know, a little burnt out, but looking forward to the show. Actually, it's like my it's an outlet for me.
Well, here you are, and Tom has agreed. Everyone, as you've got a lot of good responses for us being together, so I appreciate that. Not that bad notices would have bothered me. I really don't give a rat's behind.
Yeah,
you know, but we do have a loyal following, and they enjoy. They enjoy you, so here you are again. But
well, thanks.
The whole Bohemian thing came to mind because of this book and a couple of other things. It's funny that this book, this story came up from one of these websites about this book, because I was thinking, before I read this thing, I was thinking, you know, and I've said this too on the show, and I've talked to people who, you know, still write books and things, and I go like, well, what, you know, there's no more underground. And there just isn't any underground. And the what really came to my attention was on Facebook, suddenly I was getting friend requests from people who I knew in the underground press business. And I mean, really, I mean, we're talking about bohemian artists. We're talking about people who, you know, make their living only so they can do other things that they want to do to support their own, you know, artistic endeavors. Which today, but I mean, there's no more underground. There's nothing. First of all, there's nothing in print anymore. Everybody's out of business in terms of printing, you know, underground magazines. What are underground magazines? Everything is on the internet, and in a sense, how could it be underground if everything's on the internet? Think about that. I mean, everybody's there. Everybody's above ground now. So where? Where are the bohemians? Who are these people? And now you remember, Tom, when we were younger. I mean, there were people who were outside the. Here's what she said, or what they say in this article very quickly, is the bohemian dead. Where are all the bohemians? Where's Dylan Thomas stumbling out of the White Horse Tavern, Mary McCarthy sleeping with three men in one day, and Norman Mailer getting into brawls? The successful adult writers he had lately encountered, said this person, were dishearteningly bourgeois. They left parties with their wives at a reasonable hour, were warmly engaged with their children, lived in brownstones, cooked lovely risottos. They were not interested in breaking the conventional rules of upstanding or healthy behavior. They were living in shorts, like the bankers or lawyers next door, or wanting to. You know where were a bohemian? This is in here too. Did you ever think about where's? Didn't you think there was a Bohemia, and therefore, if you live there?
Yeah, well, that is one of the meanings of the word, is if you lived in Bohemia. And I don't know what the connection is, you know, to be unconventional, to be out of the norm, how that relates to the place Bohemia. I don't know the derivation of that, but...
Well, were Bohemians kind of like gypsies, which would, of course, leave them outside, even though they have their own traditions and they're very set in their ways, they'd be outside of the normal stream of society.
Yes.
Hey, remember the night we stayed up all night trying to figure out what you call people from certain places? Because there were like Bohemians or Enians, right?
But say the last one again.
Bohemians would be, they're not Bohemiites.
Right, they're Bohemians.
They're not.
Brooklyn.
Brooklynites.
Where you and I are from Brooklyn. Brooklynites.
We're not Brooklonians.
Not Brooklynians. Out here in Burbank, no one seems to, to know what the hell we are. It's either Burbankians or Burbankers or...
Urs, there's the other one, Urs.
No, yes, that's one ending for where you're from.
And E's, they're Chinese, they're not Chinanians.
Chinanians, I like that.
That's what's funny about this, is that if you mix them up, it's hilarious.
Yeah, you can get some funny combinations.
Bohemers.
Bohemiers.
Bohemiites. Bohemies. Bohemies. Hey, Chinese Chinese are the same. If you say they're Chinese, that's also their language. It's not like us. We're not English. We're not named after our language.
Yeah, I know. The Chinese speak Chinese.
Americans don't speak Americanese, though.
But the Spanish don't speak Spain. What?
Spanese.
Spanish. Oh, yeah. So wait. No, that works for them, too.
It does, Spanish?
Spanish.
Spanese.
The Spanish speak Spanish.
Portugal. But Portugal is called Portugal, and they speak Portuguese.
That's right.
But China's called China, but they speak Chinese, and they are Chinese. Oh, do you say the Portuguese? Oh, you do. They are known as the Portuguese.
Portuguese, yes. So that's, yeah. I prefer Portugalonians myself.
Portugalonians, that's a good one. Okay, it says here the word Bohemian has always been vague, even when Thackeray, who is Thackeray? Thackeray used it in the 1840s. A person, and here's the quote, okay? A person with artistic or intellectual tendencies who lives and acts with no regard for conventional rules or behavior.
Yes.
You like that one?
I like that one, yeah. That's a good definition of bohemian.
And it says here, we currently think of as bohemians people, the writers, we consider bohemians with themselves wistfully mourning the ideal days of other more committed bohemians. Okay, Edna O'Brien is the name of this lady. She wrote a book called Country Girl.
Yes, yeah.
And as a young writer, she is invited to a party where Ted Hughes is rumored to be attending. And she writes in the book, quote, "At last, I had read of literary courtiers in San Francisco, the beat poets assaulting the sensibilities of the bourgeois, the Russian poets who met underground to recite their words when it was too dangerous to have them printed." And by the way, that's why we call it the underground. And in a pub in Soho a few years before, when bohemians, including Dylan Thomas, had convened. So now it was Dulwich and Ted Hughes, the living Orpheus, whom I would meet. Now, Ted Hughes, I recently saw a movie called Sylvia. Did you ever see a movie called Sylvia?
No, I didn't.
You got to see this movie. Gwyneth Paltrow plays Sylvia, and now I'm lost for her last name. The real name is Paltrow. Ted Hughes was married to Sylvia something. She's a poet. She was a poet. These people actually.
Sylvia Plath.
Yes, of course. What a dope. Sylvia Plath. So you know her.
Yes.
Ted Hughes was her husband.
Yeah.
In the movie, Daniel Craig plays him. Great. It's a great movie. It's really a sad movie. Because she came to a sad ending. But so he was one of these guys. They used to have poetry meetings. They got together, they drank, and they tried to say poems really fast. And they had games and things like that. But anyway, this Edna
O'Brien. Yeah.
Edna O'Brien. When she was young, O'Brien, who critics called a cut-rate Molly Bloom, she ran off with a married aspiring writer named Ernest Gebler. She wrote this book, and the idea is this. So why have today's aspiring Edna O'Briens lost even the desire to be bohemian? The great fuzzy dream of it? Some of it is that we have absorbed in materialism of the larger culture. The idea of a novelist laboring in a garret in poverty has lost its romantic glimmer. It is the novelist who sells his novel to the movies, who has his photograph in Vanity Fair. Blah, 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 okay? So this is pretty much what we're talking about here. Who are these people and where are they? Now they're bums. What came to my mind, as I said about, you know, the people who I knew in whatever that underground was in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the internet and the whole digital technology has a lot to do with this, doesn't it? I mean, if everybody...
Oh, it has a lot to do with many of the social changes. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you see this all the time because your kids aren't anything like the kids you grew up with when you were younger and met me, and we were, because we didn't have that. It wasn't a part of our lives, no less carrying around the technology.
Yeah, I mean, it's constant. They're constantly attached to some sort of media, some electronic device, and it has pluses and minuses. And just in the classroom situation, you know, it often takes their attention away from what I'm trying to teach them or what I'm trying to say because they're hooked up to something or looking on a screen. That's the downside. The upside, though, is if we have a question about anything, it could be answered in literally less than a minute with somebody just Googling whatever subject it is, and there you have it, you know?
Sure, carrying around a library in your pocket or having it on your desk is what's closing libraries. That's why libraries are closing. I mean, who wants to even get up and go anywhere?
Yeah.
But who are the people? Are all the only people left Well, here's what, if everybody's embracing that and that is the common, that is the norm, that is what everyone's doing, then who is not doing it would be the Bohemians. Because it's conventional to do what you're talking about. Everybody does it. We do it. And yeah. We're not even from this era. So.
Well, that's, you know, I have a Twitter account. I use the internet a lot. Using it right now on Skype, you know, where this is how I'm part of this show, through technology and the internet. But I don't have a Facebook. And
oh, this makes you a Bohemian.
I get weird reactions. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, what? You don't, you know, it's unconventional. That not have
oh, okay,
Facebook,
see what you're saying. You know? Well, you know, listen to this. I heard this report this week, speaking of Facebook. If most of the people, even now, the millions of people who are on Facebook, you know, are younger people, and Facebook's gone through its changes and become very commercial in lots of ways. But the kids are really getting PO'd at what's happening on Facebook. In fact, there's a new name for Facebook from a certain age down. They call it MeBook.
Mm.
Because they say all the mothers now, mothers, fathers, all these people who are not in their generation now have pages, and they use it like they're talking to one another normally and what have you, and the kids are revolting against the very thing they thought was theirs. This is a whole generation.
Mm, yeah.
And they're going to Tumblr mostly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tumblr.
Most of them are going to Tumblr, where you could do any number of things. But
okay. Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm ahead of my time, I guess, because I had a Tumblr before I had a Twitter, but I haven't tumbled.
You're speaking Tumblese to me.
Verbs, by the way.
That's all Tumblese to you. Yes.
Twittering and tumbling. I haven't tumbled in, it's been a couple of years or something.
I went to Tumblr just to post stories and little short stories and things like that. I find it very difficult to manipulate the HTML there. It just doesn't work out totally. You put a picture up and it comes in sideways and it knocks out your stuff. I don't know. But you're right. I mean, I've had Tumblr. I had Twitter I didn't know about until we had Kurt Brando on the show. This guy who's a humorist. Was a humorist and now works in Saudi Arabia. He's on the show every now and then. He's a guy who came on and said, yeah, I'm at this thing called Twitter where people, and Twitter, again, just like Facebook, it was supposed to create tribes of people who are interested in similar things. It was not supposed to be this splash of jokes and comments and ideas.
Yeah.
And that's how we use it.
That's how I use it mostly for that, but like most of the people who follow me, they use it just for socializing. It's another social, you know, the little conversations and things like that. But
yeah, but there's it's very you're right though. If you don't have any of these accounts, could you be? Is that are you being bohemian by not having a Facebook account?
I would say no, because my idea of bohemian would include, you know, some outlandish behavior besides avoiding using Twitter or Facebook. You know, I mean that could be just my connotation of the word. I have this image of what bohemians do, you know, and they don't seem to follow any social rules, and so it might not being on Facebook is not it's maybe unconventional, but it's not like breaking any rules or any social norms.
I'll bring up something else here that I think is true, and why the bohemians are more difficult to identify with these days, or find these people. And that's because not only it's because the internet has brought everything to the level that it was never performing. It was never so either socially accepted or performing. For instance, in the days of Bohemia, when we talk about writers, and I mean, there were books that were banned because they used certain words or they graphically described certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet today, you can get on the internet and watch, you know, midget lesbians and a, you know, and donkey doing Donkey Kong. I mean,
I was just watching the midget lesbians today, as a matter of fact. Right now.
And so, so in other words, when that's accepted, when that's out there, what is taboo anymore? I mean, what can make a bohemian would be to be involved in anti-conventional things. But now even porn is conventional.
Yeah. Yeah.
To write a book and use four-letter words, whatever, I mean, use any kind of explicit language means nothing. And look at television. On sitcoms, they're saying, son of a bitch, bastard ass. I mean...
Yeah, really? Yeah.
So what...
That's a really good question. I mean, where's the line? There are no lines anymore, it seems, except in China. We have to wait. I was thinking of Russia, a communist country. Former communist country. I don't know where I'm going with this, but
I know because you just reminded me of a joke. And I've reminded me of the joke that I can't remember about the guy waiting in line in Russia. I don't know. If it comes to me, I'll tell you. But it's true. I think all this has something to do with it. It's more than just the internet. It's the fact that even if you are by nature bohemian, and that is you do not live conventionally, it's less conventionally, but you still live conventionally. But this, what is there to do that makes you bohemian? You can't wear your hair. Everybody can wear their hair long. I mean, you can't even see one. People wear weird things. And there's no more icons, are mm-hmm. there?
Yeah.
Because when we look at, like, when we look at, and I don't like to look at this guy, the guy, the Bono guy.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at the people looking at Bono, they're just looking at this guy who gets up there and sings whatever he sings, and then collects gigantic monies and has a mansion somewhere. What's the difference between this guy and any, you know what I mean? What are they doing? They're just making money and doing things that's very conventional. And we don't even have a punk underground. Who's down there? Who's doing anything?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a good point that the way this society is right now, partly because of the internet and all this media that we have, it's erased those lines. And if you're conventional, you're defined, you know, and if there's no more definition, it's all just a big fog, you know.
What do you see with if you had to name, like, you don't have to name any names, but you say a kid, you have a number of classes and you have all these kids. Uh-huh. Is there one or two that for some reason or another don't fit and they would be bohemians? And if so, why? Can you think of, or are they all just the same type of, is that whole division of kids at that age the same or what?
That's a really good question. And I have 120 students right now. I have 120 students, and there are about four or five that I would say they've got something, you know, they are unconventional. They're unconventional.
But you have to define that they have something. What puts them aside from the others?
Okay. The one of who I'm thinking of right now, she's an excellent writer, and she is so artistic, and she lives really for her art. Okay, that's the most important thing for her is her writing and her art. There's another young lady who graduated a couple of years ago. Her art was incredible, and she would write these little stories with she would draw out the characters and everything, but really, really, like, super great, you know, and she had that quality. It is, in my view, it does mean, being a bohemian means you're an artist. You're unconventional, and you're not doing it because you want to make a lot of money, or you want to, you know, you're not doing it for the notoriety or the money, but you are doing it just for the art. I think that's part of being a bohemian.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. You're creating because this is what you do, for lack of anything else. You're not necessarily making a living doing it. But
yeah.
but you're still on Facebook and Twitter and wherever. You know why? Also, because this, you know, when kids were like that or people were like that, they were painting or they're doing something, they couldn't just quickly take a picture of it and show it to 80 billion people.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, granted, you can't sell it, and sometimes you can or what have you, but, I mean, it was like you'd always be looking for somebody to back you up or to sell it, or you would do something on its own. You know, this is, there's also, think about this too, because this all fits into the whole socio-cultural thing. You don't, wherever you live, even in the city, let's bring you, because you live more in the city than I do. I live with, you know, cows or and mooing and things and stuff. Do ice cream trucks come in the summertime?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. They do. They still they do. Okay. So we still have.
Actually, out here, they come. It's almost like 11 months out of the year. Yeah.
Okay.
I think they just take off on February. You know?
Well, there you go. There's a dying thing. I mean, it's not a dying thing. I mean, I don't remember the last time here in the East that we saw even going into town. I used to work downtown. I used to do shows downtown, and that's the thick of the. I never saw anything like that. And these clubs where I used to work, I couldn't find anybody who seemed to be particularly, they weren't bohemian. They weren't off stride unless they were just out and out criminals.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny, 10 minutes ago when I was thinking, I don't know, maybe the bohemians today are the bombers or the people that shoot movie theaters or something like that, you know.
Line is so clearly drawn. It's that could be. It could be that the revolutionaries are, although you know, what do you go back to the American Revolution and I mean, they were rebels and they were revolters and they were all revolters. They were rebels. That's rebels. But you couldn't call those guys bohemians.
Yeah, that's a different thing. I wouldn't call them bohemians because it's not they weren't doing it for some sort of art. Yes, they were doing it for an ideology and a way of life.
Well, if you're doing it for an ideology, you're not you can't be a bohemian. So these people who are blowing up things or want to do it, they're just revolting against another type of convention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
They are.
It's like the Crusades, where they said, "Hey, you know, what are we going to do with all those Muslims who don't believe in Jesus? Well, let's go out and kill them." Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's like we want them to convene with us, and they're just fighting back because they want to have their own. But that doesn't mean they're not conventional because all those Muslims were conventional doing their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So two conventions cannot fight one another, and one of them is a bohemian. You know?
Two conventions, you can't, you know.
So a bohemian can't be, per se, conventional. There's just nothing you, you know, I was thinking about how I live, and I say, well, you know, I don't do things conventionally, but I do conventional things, because I have a house, I have a mortgage, I have, I pay bills, You know, and yet I live so much skin to the bone, there's no word unmaterialistic, is there?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't live, there's no word unmaterialistic. That doesn't make me a bohemian. That just puts me in a certain class of person.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You know, I was talking to my therapist about this.
And you should.
And I should.
You were talking to your therapist. Wait, about being a bohemian.
I was talking to her about the upcoming this show.
Is tonight, she listening
now?
I hope she's listening.
I don't. She may be. I don't know.
Hear the results.
Sometimes I hope she's listening when I'm there, but our time is up. And I hear that.
What did she say? Or what did you ask her? Or what went on there?
We were talking about Bohemians, and she was saying she, in her opinion, these people have behavioral disorders.
Oh, judgmental. She's judgmental about this then.
Well,
that's being pretty judgmental.
They just came up the last show too. The phrase in a good way. She meant that in a good way.
Oh, okay. Disorder. We can now have the positive definition of disorder. Write this down. Write this down.
Well, she was saying that the society would see many of these people as having behavioral disorders. But that's a matter of opinion, you know. You take a guy like Robert Downey Jr., all right? He is bipolar, but would he be as creative as he is? Would he be as good an actor as he is if he didn't have that particular behavioral disorder?
Is that part of what he went through when he was into the drugs and stuff before his comeback? Really? I didn't know he was bipolar and able to function as a multi-billionaire now. How does he do that?
Yeah, well, there is that point too. Yeah. From what I understand of him, excuse me, he chooses not to be medicated. He chooses to deal with his bipolar disorder with nutrition and health. What many would call new age techniques. Instead of prescription medication.
Did your therapist happen to think that maybe this was always the case, but in the past, you have a kill button, don't you?
Yes.
You have a kill button, because I saw you coughing and I didn't hear it.
Very good.
You got a kill button.
I got all kinds of stuff going here.
I like that microphone. I wish they could see. You got a really beautiful little microphone. Oh,
yeah, you can't see the microphone?
I could see it. They can't.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's not television, okay?
Well, describe it to them. No.
Anyway, now if we look back where the culture was not so open and things that we're talking about were not considered copacetic or what have you, would your therapist think that maybe that was always the case? There's some kind of disorder going on with somebody who doesn't think or do conventional things, so Downey Jr. deals with it like that. Dylan Thomas was a drunk and he had psychological problems. I mean, everybody's got psychological. Even conventional people have psychological problems.
Oh yeah,
and disorders.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they don't all write and drink and do these kind of things. So how does that fit with bipolar people who aren't creatively attuned?
Well,
why don't we get her on the show? Get her on the phone, will you? Because I'm just asking questions. I'm just asking. You see what I'm saying, right?
You know, we were talking about how do you define this stuff? Where do you draw the line and so on? And she was saying that they being the psychological community, define people, creative people, as eminent or ordinary. Everybody has ordinary creativity. And she was making the point, however, that even ordinary people are more creative when their psyche is
disturbed.
I wouldn't exactly say disturbed, but when
you said disorder, disturbed.
Manic. Was on the manic side.
Manic, I like that. Because that's.
Yeah. So, we tag people, you're this, you're bipolar, you're this, you know. But we all have this spectrum of this range, you know. we are all somewhat bipolar, and you know, but the so-called eminent artists are more bipolar or more manic. They're showing the signs of more being more manic.
How can somebody be slightly bipolar? Are they like what, half? I mean, bipolar. What do we do? Split it into a quarter polar or eighth polar?
Well, I would say, look at it like you know, this. Okay, here this analogy just came to me, so why not use it? If you think of a strike zone for a pitcher, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the inside corner and the outside corner, and then you have it right down the middle, you know.
And they're all but strikes.
It's a range, you know. I mean, you can be way inside or way outside, or you could be somewhat inside and somewhat outside, or you could be straight down the middle, you know.
But they're all strikes. They're all strikes. If it's in the inside or the outside, it's all strike. The guy doesn't go, that's kind of a strike. That's a little bit of a strike.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, of course we can even debate that, you know, with umpires.
That was a little bit of a strike, more of a ball. Let's make it a ball. I don't know about that analogy, because a strike is a strike is a strike. If it's a strike, it's a strike. If you're bipolar, you're bipolar. And you're saying, like, no, you could be like a little bit to the left. You're a little bit to the left bipolar. Do doctors do that? They go, like, you know what we've established? You're
well,
kind
I guess
of
they
like
would say,
little,
okay, let's, what? Again, if we want to use the strike zone analogy, why not? Let's say that if you're outside the strike zone, if you're too inside or too outside, you're bipolar. You're not a strike.
Wait.
That's it. Wait,
that's
I
it.
Got
you got
thing.
It. You got
not
it.
Not only are you not a strike, but you got balls. And because you got balls, you'll do anything you want.
Why don't we do this? Why don't you give me like a one-sentence definition of bipolar? First of all, wait a second. Are there people who are unipolar? Because if you're not bipolar, are you unipolar? You're just polar? And then when you take the polar and you have two parts, you're bipolar. Why? No, how can you be bipolar? Why aren't you just polar? Well, I mean, it's not semantics. It's true that we.
Well, it is. It is a lot of semantics in a way, you know. Okay. But bipolar. I guess what I'm saying is that everyone is somewhat bipolar, and by that I mean we have a range. You know, we have moods. We have mood. We're in a good mood. We're sad, and we're not creative, or we're a little more manic and more creative. Everybody has that.
But okay.
A person who is tagged bipolar with bipolar disorder
has too many moods.
They're outside the strike zone. You know, they're like too down, maybe to the point of being suicidal, and they're too up. You know, like the Robert Downey Jr., who winds up in some stranger's house looking for. I don't know what. He didn't even know what the hell he was looking for.
Now, what's the difference between that and dementia? Ben, if you could.
I can't answer that myself.
I know. I'm asking you as if you're
getting into semantics.
Yeah, well, I'm asking you as if you're a doctor, and you're not. And we do have a doctor who comes on the show, but he's bipolar, so he doesn't. No. and we're going to have to talk more about him. But I think that, I don't know, I think this thing about being a bohemian is, I don't know how about this disorder thing, because I don't think you're, because you could be, here's the difference. Let's say you have a style of painting and nobody like, I mean, some people like it, and you got this little group of people who like it, and they come see you when you have your little shows, and maybe you have little shows at places, and they come and they see them once in a while. Someone takes out $20 and says, "Here, I'd like to buy this," and you know, and the person who makes the paintings doesn't necessarily. It sounds like I'm describing my son Jack, but it's true. Suppose you know some people know of you, some people don't. You don't have the backing, even though you have the internet. X amount of people go. Okay, now let's take that same person, and suddenly everybody loves it. And he's doing the same exact thing, making the same exact paintings. But now everybody loves it, and they're all buying it, and it goes from being $20 to $20,000. Okay? Mm-hmm. So why is he not a bohemian anymore? You see, because now he's conventional, but he's doing all the things that he did when he was a bohemian and unconventional. So, so obviously some kind of status and stature have something to do with this also then.
Yeah, you know, what you're saying now reminds me of an interview I heard not too long ago with John Lennon, who was talking about himself and his desire to create and pretty much have fun with music, and how, you know, becoming super famous changed so much of that for him, you know. And he had a inner conflict, I guess you would say, with, you know, it may have been part of why he left, you know, and to do things less conventional than what the other guys thought. I don't know, you know more, a lot more about the Beatles than I do, but I think he had a creative conflict.
But, and this is a perfect example too, in a sense, and maybe that was his conflict, but here's the point. And this actually worked, because no matter what he did unconventionally, he got a tremendous amount of exposure because he was already a commercial entity, okay? So when the Beatles first came out and they were looking for every possible thing to make money from them, a publisher came along and said, "What do? You scribble and write poems?" And he goes, "Yeah, John Lennon does that. Well, let me see them." And then suddenly he has two books out. These two books would never, ever, ever have been published until the internet, and he could have published them himself. They never would have been exposed. Now, here's the important point. They never would have been so people now, they love it because it's him and he's the guy who sang "I Want to Hold You," whatever, and they love it. This is early on too, okay? And he loves doing this. He loves writing these stupid poems, and they have their influences from English and stuff he grew up with. And I've done that whole stream of influence. I've done shows on that. But here's the point. The point is that when push came to shove, no matter what he did with Yoko, sitting in bags, screaming, whatever it was, all that stuff never, ever made the kind of money or got the kind of, even though it had the exposure, it never appealed to a mass audience because it was bohemian. If he sold a million of those books, he sold them on the wave of that commercial success, and then they're dead. Who is walking around now? Are you teaching? You teach English, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is there a book in your curriculum called "The Spaniard in the Works" by John Lennon? No.
No.
Okay, because it's not a literary claim. It never got there. It's nothing now. You could buy it for someone has a used copy for $1.12 on eBay, all right? You know?
Oh, yeah.
So there's a perfect example. So maybe also, because he's a dichotomy then, because everything he does, you know, look at Imagine. I mean, I can't believe, I personally think, and I've said this before publicly, I think it's the worst song he ever wrote.
Imagine?
Yeah. I mean, okay. And not only that, but everyone reinterpreted the song. And the song was done at the Olympics by an incredible number of people in a big chorus. And they used this John Lennon face and everything, okay? They changed the lyrics. Think about this. They changed the lyrics because in it he says, "Imagine no religion. Imagine no God." And they took all that out. They just changed it because they went, "No, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings here."
I didn't realize that, but
so here they, you see,
I think that sucks.
Yeah, and he would think it sucks even if he didn't think it was one of his, you know, better songs. So forget, that's just judgment. Okay, that's just an opinion. That doesn't matter what's better and what's not better. But here's the piece of work that they got a hold of, and they said, "No, we can't say that. Let's change it. Let's just." And if you go back and watch the opening or closing, whatever ceremonies there were, the last time they had the Olympics, and they did that whole English thing going because it was in London.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they did that.
But they changed that. Wow.
Yes, they did, because they did not want, imagine no religion.
No religion.
And they went, "We can't say that. There's people, there's Protestants out there." It's like, so,
I mean, it's you may, I mean, he's just, they just literally castrated that song.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They took the meaning, they took whatever it meant, and changed it and made it appeal so that it appealed to them.
Well, we're getting back to that same analogy again, because that song had balls. They castrated it. Mm-hmm. Now it's just a strike down the middle. It's not.
See how it all comes together?
It's amazing.
Tom Savino is here with me, my friends, as you're listening, driving around. I imagine people now with all this mobile. You know, our listenership is just shot through the roof now because people can actually drive around. Why they'd want to do this, I still don't know. And listen. And they're in bars now. They're in bars now saying things like, hey, did you hear what this guy just said? Now imagine that. You go out to a bar, but you bring your media with you, and you listen to the media while you're out there. You're doing like 2, 3, 4 things. They must all be bipolar, Tom. Or, anyway.
Did you know that today is the 40s? Today. May 16th.
Yes.
The 47th anniversary of the release of Pet Sounds.
Today is.
Isn't that? Now, there is Brian Wilson, you know, a guy who puts sand in his living room, you know.
Yeah, I know very
dolphins
well.
Dolphins in his pool.
You know. I met and kind of befriended Van Dyke when I was in L.A., and he was on the show.
Oh, really?
Van Dyke Parks was on the show and talked. He was like 3/4 inebriated, which he always happens. He likes that southern comfort. But we talked a lot about Brian and the idea. Now we know he's not. We know he's a he's a quadrupolar. I don't know what he's like. What he's a guy. But that's all. You're right. That is a psychological thing. And Pet Sounds was his interpretation. Do you know it was his interpretation of what he heard when he heard? This is weird. When he heard Rubber Soul, the Beatles album, which was just this acoustic band album. I mean, it was mostly acoustic.
Yeah.
He said, I won't stand for this. We have to do one of those. And he came up with that. Look at his interpretation of, you know,
wow.
Yeah, this is what he heard. And, but whatever he heard was intrinsic, and he tried to, express it as he could express it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, and it was not a hit, of course.
Yeah.
In the beginning. So now, could we say that, and then, you know, there's the other case. So whenever the Beach Boys went out, if they, while the rest of the group was out there touring and they were still doing like, Surfing USA, people wanted to hear Surfing USA.
Yeah.
And they want to hear Catch a Wave, and they want to hear Fun. And then they go, listen to this one, and they go into, I know there's an answer, and everybody goes to the bathroom.
yeah.
So
that's, you know, that the irony of Pet Sounds is that it has Sloop John B. Now I like Sloop John B, but you know, it's on there because it was the hit, you know. I mean, that was the hit, you mm-hmm. know. So we gotta have it on this album. No, I have nothing against it, but in a way I feel like it doesn't even fit the the mood of the rest of Pet Sounds.
I don't know the history of that, though. I wonder if that was that recorded separately or was it recorded as part of the album? I don't even know. I don't know that.
I'm not sure either. I have a feeling it wasn't part of the sessions for Pet Sounds.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But this album, that didn't sell the album anyway, even though that was a relative hit, a relatively okay top 20, 30, whatever. But, you know, but then you have all these, but then, you know, what about the groups that were failures, but yet they were successful? In music, I mean, let me look at Bohemian music. I'll bet you there are people like John Cage out there. You've heard of John Cage, right? They, you know, just doing these absurd things. And I always thought that, like, you know, what's the difference between John Cage doing his stuff, okay, and this is all very weird, abstract things, people who don't know John Cage, write it down, look it up later on your Google it, Yahoo it. But here's the deal. What's the difference between John Cage doing this stuff considered incredibly abstract and bohemian, and Pete Barbeauty playing the broom.
Mm.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. So there's where is the difference? And yet, Pete Barbeauty was doing that in Las Vegas. Thoroughly conventional audiences.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how to respond to that.
Well, I'm just saying that we're trying to see how these lines can be drawn or can't be drawn or why we've drawn them. Yeah. And now, can you name? I don't even know if I could. I sit back, like I said, I can't. Can you name one bohemian recording artist? If there are recording artists, or somebody who's out there, whether they're playing live or not, or whatever. Who? Think about it, people. It's the top of the hour. You're listening to Savino Cotolo Chronicles right here. Tom Savino is with us from his undisclosed location in California, where you did disclose it. You're a Burbankian.
The underground.
From the underground in California. And I'm here on the East Coast through the courtesy of SRN Media Works. This show, once again, coming out to you live wherever I'm sitting in America, shoots up to Canada, shoots across to the UK, comes back. I don't know why it's done like that. All these servers involved, thousands of miles, or as Carl Sagan would say, billions and billions of bytes.
Billions and billions of light years.
And that's why we're here, and you're listening to us just about anywhere you might be. Get the apps by going to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. You know, I wrote on the blog. I know you. I guess you didn't see it because when I write on the blog. I wrote on
no,
the
I did.
Blog.
I did
oh, you did see it?
Because
I mentioned
the Coney Island incident.
Yeah, I added that. Do you think we were trying to be, or were we naturally showing our bohemianism back in the days we were in bands and running around drinking and doing things single guys do and playing, you know?
No.
We weren't.
I think I would have, you know, if you asked me that same question 30 years ago, I would say, oh yeah, no, we're definitely bohemian, yeah.
But now now you look back and you say no.
Yeah, I don't think we were bohemian. I would say you are more of the bohemian ilk than the rest of us, you know.
As it turned out.
You know what? And I think that's part, you know, you look at Wonoco. We mentioned Dom earlier. You got Dom and Angelo, and
These were the members of a group, a live group. Oh, we actually recorded too. You know what I heard the other night? I heard
Dead on Arrival.
Yes. How did you know that?
Uh huh.
How did you know? I heard that the other night
Alfonso,
Jim,
the spirit just told me.
Oh, okay. You're going to have to go back and listen to that one. Alfonso showed up and told him. Could have said.
That's cool. I'd like to hear that.
I'll have to get you, I'll send you a link. You could download it. Okay. I'll get it back on there. Cause Jim, who was, Jim, who's never been on the show, who's a co-writer with us, and he gave me a CD of a lot of stuff, and that was very, very, actually very commercial stuff. That was not very bohemian, but by what you're talking about, by comparison, I also heard, remember we also had a very short and commercial, well, commercial, but I mean, we had a short and produced, version of Elephants.
Oh, Elephants.
And
yeah.
You were playing. But I guess what Tom is saying is that along the roads of our lives, again, I'm in the upper left-hand corner of the strike zone, I guess. I'm not completely out of it, am I? No, because
no,
I'm still conventional.
I
still worked. I worked for people. I worked the things I got. But it was in an unconventional way by comparison. Maybe we're looking at comparisons here,
yeah,
in a way, more.
I think that's a good point. I mean, if you take Brian Wilson and he didn't have sand in his living room and dolphins in his pool, you know, you know, is not seen as so bohemian.
And he couldn't have had that unless he had made money conventionally and been It's funny. Do you think there's some guilt involved in people who get commercially, some people or artists who get popular and make money and get fame for their for the stuff they don't even like they do as much as they don't like they do as much. Listen to this English. The things they don't, they're really not as proud of the things that they become popular for. That's a horrible sentence too. You know what I mean though?
Rephrase that again.
Well, for instance, here's Brian Wilson. You know, when he's younger, they're doing whatever they're doing because they're kids, and they're not really bohemian at all. They're not doing anything weird, and they come up with these, regular commercial songs. And then he starts to do other stuff that is not that is a bit more abstract, and he likes that better because he's growing. And yet the audience stays in the same place. They just want to hear that. Do you think they get guilty because they're just doing? He says, "Well, I don't want to go back and do that again. I mean, I want to do something new, and it doesn't matter." And they become.
I'm sure he probably had conflicts with that because he liked the adulation and the fame. I'm guessing. Actually, I don't know.
But what about
eventually? He didn't like touring anymore. So.
But if we look at Salvatore Dali, this is not exactly a person who was. I mean, that's what he did. That's how he made his living, and everybody knows him. We're talking about him now.
Yeah.
And yet, he was unconventional, but he's commercially unconventional. Does that make him a bohemian or just a rich bohemian or what? Who's today's Salvatore Dali? Who's today's Andy Warhol?
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. You know,
You see,
I don't know.
That's the thing. We don't know. And I think we should know who are these people and why aren't they somehow showing themselves over on the internet? Because the internet is, would you think that anything in the internet is considered underground? By underground, we have to define that then. Is defined as less popular or counterculture? Let's use that. Mm. Where's the counterculture?
Well, I heard a report today. The three networks, remember them?
The
three networks. They unveiled their fall schedule, and the report. This was on NPR radio, and the reporter was saying, you know, it's not such a big deal anymore. It's like their ratings or things on the internet have higher ratings
than stuff.
Than, you know, the shows on NBC and CBS and ABC. It's like a dead media. You know, it's not happening anymore. So it's become, I don't know, maybe to be a bohemian now would have a weekly show on NBC or something. I mean, if somebody had a weekly show on NBC now, it would still be pretty mainstream, you know.
And commercial, not commercial, but they even when they used to be the cable access, there's nobody on cable access anymore either, is there? Are there? Were there? I mean, who's on cable access now?
No, what do you mean by cable access?
They used to be the cable companies used to have to be able to hand over part of their airtime to public service or to people, to regular people.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they used.
Now that you mention it, yeah, I do remember that.
Well, I don't see that anymore. Why aren't there? Now that is a perfect venue. Is that the perfect theater for something that would be counterculture? I know a couple of people who have done weird type things in that respect. But where is that? And they're not allowed to do. They're not supposed to do that anymore.
You're mentioning it just reminded me that I remember that. I remember, and it turned tuning in and saying, "Oh my God, this is like the." Guy three doors down has got a show, you know, and thinking, wow, that's great, you know, that they have to have this venue for the public so that we can air things. I don't know, but I would bet $1,000, and I really would bet $1,000
that
the corporados have probably said, you know, to the government. I'm assuming this was first a government requirement. Hmm. You know,
yeah, probably FCC.
And I guarantee you that some corporate people said, "Hey, look, you know, nobody's watching this stuff anyway. It's wacky people. They're unprofessional. This is not really doing any kind of service. So, can we do away with this? And by the way, here's a golfing trip to Hawaii. So,
right.
I'm sure they did away with something like that.
It's kind of like also comedy in a sense, because once there was no more vaudeville, and there are comedy clubs, but there aren't any people. There aren't even any people like George Carlin anymore. I mean, he was like a dinosaur, and that he was the last, and he's from that era, that whole Lenny Bruce era. There's nobody. Is there anybody like that anymore, or do we have to look at Bill Maher and use his comedy and political comedy and say that because he's not bohemian? I mean, he's unconventional in that he doesn't want to get married, but he's a rich guy and he does a big show. And but who's out there? Don't you wonder who's out there?
Yes, I was just thinking about this the other day. You know, a good example I think of a bohemian would be Lenny Bruce. I think
absolutely, yeah.
Lenny Bruce, that kind of guy is just not around anymore.
But once
I think
again,
George Carlin's like Brian Wilson. George Carlin started as a sort of a conventional way, but
so did Lenny. I mean, Lenny
went out of the strike zone and became a bohemian. But I don't know who's doing that anymore. I mean, I like Louis C.K., but I wouldn't put him in exactly that category. Right.
No, he's not. He's not in that category. In fact, he's becoming more and more. But by the way, then go back to Lenny Bruce for a second, because Lenny Bruce was breaking ground. See, what Lenny Bruce, if you go to any, you can watch it on television now. You can watch Louis C.K. Listen to what Louis C.K. says. I think I saw his latest one on HBO called Oh My God.
Yeah.
And you listen you watch that and you listen to him and you realize that, Lenny Bruce, you know, got arrested and got nuts because he said some of the things. He's just using words, no less ideas, like Louis talks about. So, well, that means that we've come a universe away from the restrictions. And once we get away from the restrictions, now we know that we can't call Louis C.K. a bohemian because he's not doing it. It's not unconventional, is why.
Yeah, yeah. There is no strike zone anymore.
Okay, so I've pretty much come. So what we're saying, what we're coming to this after an hour and 13 minutes, I think we're coming to the conclusion that we can't draw the line. There's what is unconventional then? What is we've done away with? Okay, even though the rebellious, violent people are not. The terrorists aren't unconventional. That's a convention in itself. In fact, there's a terrorist convention in my neighborhood tomorrow. It's conventional. There's a, by the way, Tom, what kind of dogs do they, pet dogs do they have at Al-Qaeda? Al-Qaeda has what kind of pet dogs?
What kind of pet dogs do they have at Al-Qaeda? I don't know what.
Terrorists.
I love going to tweet that one later.
We're going to go back to jokes again. Thinking about the great moment when you think of the joke. It's one of the greatest moments in life.
Yeah.
We can't find what is it? You know what? Even look, 50% of all marriages end up in divorce. So marriage isn't even, if you're not married, it's not conventional. It used to be conventional to be married. Now, and you're single at your age?
Yeah.
No, I'm divorced. And so what? I've been divorced 5 times. Okay, fine. That's no big deal.
Hey, listen, you brought up a great subject because it's, you know, New Zealand became, I don't know what number country to now accept gay marriage, you know, and how many states already?
Yes.
I think 13 states have accepted gay marriage. California did accept gay marriage, but then a certain party that I won't mention
put a
bill in to outlaw that. So, you know,
it's still all a matter of time, though. What you're looking at and what you're talking about, of course, is the fact that the unconventional becoming the conventional. If everything unconventional became conventional, we'd have to just do away with bohemian. We'd have to say, you know, like the same, an extinct form.
Yeah. you would have to add the word extinct to it. Yeah.
What did let's see if there's anything else Edna said that might complement what we're talking about. She's got a lot of writers because she wrote this. Here it says here, wait, the first Dylan Thomas, who was very often drunk, in debt, cheating, and failing to fulfill various professional and personal obligations, wrote in a letter to a friend, the second in a poem. The second, I don't know what that means, but here, this is quoting Dylan Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one time, the last time will come, and I'll never struggle. I'll stay down here forever, handcuffed and blindfold, sliding my wound around music, my sack trailed in the slime, with all the rest of the self-destroyed escapologists in their cages, drowned in the sorrows they drown, and in my piercing own, alone and one with the coarse and cozy damned seahorsey dead, weeping my tons.
he just said that like off the top of his head.
Right, exactly. Dylan. That's only after two, that's after five beers. You should have heard seven beers. And then it says, or, and here's what I guess they're interpreting. The closer I move to death, one man, through his sundered hulks, the louder the sun blooms and the tusked, ramshackling sea exults. I like that. Or. Oh, of course. That's what I was thinking of that one. Not the other line. I mean, you know, when the tusk ramshackling. And not only does nobody would even dare, poets. I mean, talking about poets? Who are the poets? I'll tell you, here's a fascinating thing. I found a site and I joined it. Because I have tons of poems over the years just scribbled down places. And I wasn't about to, you know, publish them anywhere, here, there, or what have you. Including, I got into a couple of years ago, I got into a hobby writing sonnets. It was a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just writing sonnets because I love the form, you know. So okay. So what I did was I went to this, I found this site called Hello Poetry.
Hello Poetry.
It sure doesn't sound like an underground place, right? And what happens is I went there and I said, okay, I'll start a page. It's free and I'll just post my poems and then other people read them and, you know.
Yeah.
But here's what was fascinating about it was that I realized, oh my goodness, there are people here writing this stuff and they think this is, I mean, that it's poetry, it's stuff they write. In other words, it was terrible. It is. So much of it is terrible because it's like anybody thinks, they can write poetry, and they write this poetry. Some of it, there's some darn good stuff there, and these are young people. This is what I liked about it. I went there and I said, well, you know, I'm a ragged, though seasoned, I'm a ragged, been through stuff, and these people are like, you know, what are they dealing with, and how do they write poetry? This comes to mind because I can't imagine any of them putting into words things that are classically constructed the way Thomas did, and even though these kids read Shakespeare, I'm sure. Do you guys still do Shakespeare?
Well,
right?
Yeah. Today we were working on Macbeth in the 10th grade class. Yeah.
We all know Macbeth. We all know this is a Freudian slip. We all know Macbeth's dog was named what?
I'm sorry. What?
Macbeth's dog. His dog.
Macbeth's dog.
Was who?
Is this a joke? Because
it's a joke. Okay, you have to tell him it's a joke, right? Yeah, I was just going to say Spot, of course. Spot.
Oh, okay. That's good. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he was going inside, and they went out. Out, damn spot. He's always going inside. But you have to know. But even that, you have to know some Shakespeare.
I should have been quicker
yeah,
on that.
Yeah, you should have. You should have. But you had a rough day. You burned out.
Yeah.
And for all we know, that phrase, burned out, comes from Shakespeare. There's. I mean, people don't even realize. People who hate Shakespeare and don't understand don't realize a couple of things. Number one, as you know, there's an immense number of phrases that people use every day in English that are based on, they're not based, they come directly from dialogue, from his play, from his plays.
Yeah.
The way he's spoken. Like, there's a ton of them.
Oh, man. Like, what ho ye merry swains.
Which
people use that all the time.
I know. I was making dinner and it came up. No, simple words like household. Things that were words that
oh, yeah.
Seriously,
many, many phrases. Yeah.
And they also don't understand that Shakespeare was indeed, you know, an extremely commercial person. He was not a bohemian. He worked for money. He made money. He wanted the largest audience in the world. He was not. Correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but then back.
You've seen the Shakespeare in Love, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's the way you described him. I think is pretty much how he was, from what I understand. He was.
There's a great book, and I've mentioned this book before. I forget the name of the author, and that's terrible. But you can look it up. Write this down. It's called Will in the World.
Will in the World.
It's great. The guy who knows Shakespeare inside out, I mean, he just knows of him. Because Shakespeare never wrote down, he never had a diary, and he never did anything. So this guy tries to construct who he was, what he felt, and what was going on with him based on history and documentation and his plays. Because he used things in his plays.
Yeah.
Okay. But people who are, now I'm looking at these kids, they're studying, that's why I go back to that, they're studying Shakespeare or whatever they're doing, this, that, and the other thing. But they're not, they won't even think of turning a phrase the way even Dylan Thomas, right? I mean, who thinks of doing that? People who are writing without using uppercase and stuff don't know E. Cummings. It's like,
it's really an excellent point what you're making, yeah. I mean, the language is just, I don't know. Last year, this very bright young lady was thinking of how to describe the sound of a helicopter. We were doing descriptive writing. She said, how can I describe it? I said, well, really, think, you know, get there, think about it, you know? And she doesn't write poetry. She doesn't do any kind of writing like that. She wasn't even into this assignment that much, which was descriptive writing. But she described the sound of a helicopter as a stuttering whoosh.
Hmm.
And it was like, and obviously, I mean, here this is over a year later, and I get my point is, it's so rare for somebody to come up
yeah.
with such a well-written two words
yeah.
that it's like, oh man, this is like great. You know, it's just so rare.
And it's almost, that's almost onomatopoeic, almost in a way, but because you
yeah.
hear it.
Well,
you
actually,
hear
it. I guess whoosh, it is. Yeah, you would say
stuttering whoosh. But
it's even personification too. She wasn't yes. even going for that.
Yes. That's a good, now that's, you know, there's so much good prose is poetic. You don't have to write prose poetry to have, you know, terrific that. I mean, if you use that in fiction, if she was writing a piece of fiction and she used that, any critic would look at that and go, whoa, right?
Yeah.
That's wonderful, you know?
Yeah.
Not just because it's original, but because it works. Okay.
Yeah.
But so there they are in school, and I guess now, but I don't know what this has to do with being bohemian other than the fact that she was looking beyond the boundaries of what was the conventional way. She immediately thought, how do I describe this? I've never heard it described, and anything I've ever heard doesn't work. So she needed an unconventional way. That was an unconventional way, correct?
Yes, yeah.
By definition, it has to be, because nobody's walking around going, you know, I'm there sitting in the house, I go out on the porch, and there's this stuttering whoosh. And I notice there's helicopters flying over the house. People start saying that,
that's a great point. Yeah. You're making it, it's a great point, because this girl, she is very conventional. She's really conventional girl. She's wonderful. She's a wonderful young lady, but she's not a bohemian at all.
Mm.
Not at all. But for that moment, she was, you know?
She was
definitely unconventional and got to the truth. Maybe that's part of being bohemian, is getting to the truth of something.
Well, I don't know about truth, because that could be, I mean, truth is subjective. So I don't know about truth of it, but certainly getting to something that everyone can identify would be, communicating at that mass. You know, look, after tonight, I guarantee you that, I mean, 80% of the people who are listening now, and you can tell this to this girl, okay, you can tell her, you can say that when it may get back to her, stuttering, whoosh, will get back. It's going to go, it's out there now. I mean, she wrote it in a little piece of paper, and you and how many people read it?
Oh, maybe five people. Oh, the whole class heard it.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Okay, well, that's only those people or what have you. But now we have got stuttering whoosh. I want everybody out there, whoever. You see, you can actually make this part of the lexicon as long as more people accept it and use it. Think of all the things that were unconventional, that are conventional now because people use it. And that's what we were talking about with the...
I just had this projection into time, like hundreds of years from now, when somebody will say, oh, there's that stuttering whoosh cliche again.
Exactly! It gets...
Oh, don't give me that. Whatever you do, don't describe the sound of a helicopter as a stuttering whoosh, because like everybody does.
but you're assuming, mind you, that there will be helicopters hundreds of years from now.
Well, that's true.
So you were thinking conventionally. You weren't thinking of where that stuttering whoosh may originate in hundreds of years. Something else. Could be toasters. It could be making toast. They could be machines that make toast, and they have a stuttering whoosh to them. I don't know.
The next phone, you know, you don't even call a phone anymore.
Yeah.
It's just like, unless it's a landline. That's the only phone, you know. Because the last thing these electronic devices do is make a phone call. You know, it's like the least important thing they do now is make a phone call.
I was in the car today, and I had this stupid station on, because you know it's really sickening. Here's what's really sickening: on the AM band at noon, I'm in the car, and I click the scan because I don't want to hear Rush Limbaugh. He's on the main channel. Okay, now it goes through five other channels, all carrying Rush Limbaugh. This is the same market.
Different, oh my God.
Yes.
Five.
Different channels, all of them carrying, and you could just keep clicking it. Five channels with him. That's really weird. That's really sickening. But I stop at this one station that plays music. In fact, it's just, you'll be interested in this because we're a radio guy. John Tesh has a radio show. Remember John Tesh?
Oh, yeah.
From Entertainment Tonight. He has a radio show. And on his radio show, he never announces. He plays music. Well, he doesn't play music. Here's what his show, and any station can get his show. What they do is they get soundtracks of John Tesh saying the name of their, you know, they customize it, says the name of the station. And then everything else he talks about are these things like from Reader's Digest and studies and magazines. And he goes, an orange has more vitamin C than, and he does all these information things. And then they just cut and they break into music. And the music is all for bordering on late war babies into baby boomers. Okay, it's all that era. Okay, and it's AM. Okay, so that's their audience. That's their target audience. They have John Tesh talking about these things that I, you know, it's not even a show. You can't even call it personality radio. It's kind of information radio with baby boomer, whatever, AM music. But here's my point. So I get that station, and I went, okay, well, at least it's not, you know, Rush Limbaugh. And you know, and I'm going to hear some recognizable pieces of music. And what came on was the single version of Paul Simon's Kodachrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, wow, it's like there's no more Kodachrome.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there's no. He's got a song here about film, and he's talking about. Okay, I could take it. I could still understand the metaphor, obviously. But I'm going, what would he sing now? If he did it, he couldn't do that. He couldn't write that song now. It's you give me the zeros and ones. You give me what? I mean, what is he going to say? The colors come. It's not. There's no more film.
Yeah, that's right. That's. Pretty gone. I mean, there are some people that are like into, for I don't know, some sort of artistic nostalgic thing where they still work with film just because they're.
So wait a second. The people who worked with film were conventional because film was what everybody worked with to take pictures. Now, if you work with film, God knows where you'd get it. You're unconventional. Now you're unconventional because you work with film.
Yeah. Yeah.
The same would go for tape. If you have a tape recorder with a reel, try to go to Radio Shack. Ask the guy, hey, I want a reel of audio tape. And they, what are you talking about?
Well, you know, I got this microphone that you see, and I was considering getting a compressor, you know. And I went to a few places, like we still have a lot of media places here in L.A., so. I went to them and I said a compressor, and they said, "Well, what do you? You mean it's for live?" I said, "No, no, it's for maybe I want to record. I want a podcast. My friend has a podcast show," and I went, and he said, "It's all software now. You don't need that unless you're going to be live in a theater or something, but." Anything you do on the computer, it's all software. It does all the compression, all the sound effects, all whatever you want.
Well, we've drawn an interesting line here, though, because we had a line, we erased the line, and now we drew another line. So is it possible? Certainly a lot more. Look at books. I mean, people there's still bookstores and people read books, and yet books are more digitally generated now. They are more generated by digitally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So to have a book is unconventional.
I think now, yeah, I think we have crossed that line. Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, my wife and I, we love books and we love to have them. There's something about having them that we like, you know, beyond reading them. And that's probably unconventional now. That's.
So, well, we had never thought we would be. Talking like this or saying this in this conversation, but now it's bohemian to if you're walking around and you got a book, like it's a still school book. Yeah, you're in school though. All your books are all books. You don't have
we do still have books in school far.
But
that you know, but the Los Angeles Unified School District. I don't know where they thinking they're getting the money for this. But in 2015, say, every student will have an iPad.
The iPads are actually going to my iPads, which can do everything in internet, will replace, not replace, but I mean they'll make home internet use a lot more unconventional, a lot more bohemian. Hey, you know, we could use this word now in many ways. I'm beginning to look at I'm looking around here and I'm going like, well, God, there's so many bohemian things here. It's amazing. You're right. In terms of we've come to this. This is almost a conclusion. If you do something now, we don't have numbers on this though, that everyone does, you're not, you can't be bohemian. But if you're still doing stuff in this primitive way, so bohemian equals primitive? No, and that's a whole different way. That's a whole different plateau. Because in the old days, bohemians used the same tools as people who did conventional stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. A writer used typewriters. I said typewriter to my son Ray. He went, what? What?
Yeah.
And
you know, every now and then we're watching a movie in my class, and I'm doing it half jokingly, but you know, I'll say, oh, that's a typewriter. Oh, that's a telephone.
Right. Oh, you know. That's those old things you used to use when it's amazing. It's always amazing to me to think of how they go, how did you ever live like that?
Yeah.
Unconventional. And that's like, unconventional convention. I remember I don't want to make this, I don't want to sound like two guys on a stoop in rocking chairs, but I remember when, I might have told this story before, but who knows, we got new listeners. When color TV came out, mm-hmm. Now there's people going, my God, how old is that guy? When color TV came out, very few people had it. It was unconventional to have color TV, okay?
Yeah.
My grandfather, idiot that he was at the time.
Oh, I remember this, yeah.
He bought... I'm almost ashamed to say this is in my DNA, okay? This is my grandfather. He bought a plastic screen.
Yeah.
A plastic, it was see-through, it wasn't opaque, it was see-through. And it had on it wavy stripes of color.
Yeah.
Wavy stripes, and he had a black and white television, and he pasted the...
Right, I think static electricity would stick it to the screen.
Might have even been that, yeah. On top of the black and white television. And he went, look, we got color TV! And he sat there watching it. And now, the colors are fixed. So the guy is talking, and he's got the top of his suit is blue, and the bottom is red, and then he bends down or he moves another way, and the back of his suit is now yellow, and his face is green. Yeah. That was very unconventional.
Mm. That was a little...
stupid and unconventional.
Unconventional and a little...
He was old.
Mad.
He was bipolar, dementia, bipolar, old guy.
Listen, I have a quote from Edgar Allan Poe.
Go.
About manic depressive illness.
Oh, from
and
Poe?
And creativity.
Really? From Poe?
Yeah, and he says...
Go.
Men have called me mad, but the question is not yet settled whether madness is or is not the loftiest intelligence, whether much that is glorious, whether all that is profound does not spring from disease of thought, from moods of mind exalted at the expense of the general intellect.
Where's that place? Is that it?
Edgar Allan Poe.
And when was it? Do you have any date on that? When was that written?
No.
Okay. We know it was, 19th century at least.
Was it the 19th century? Yeah.
It'd have to be 19th century.
Yeah.
The guy, I forgot the name of the guy, the painting that I that's on the CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com is called The Bohemians.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done in 1914. And of course, in 1914, during that whole Dada era of people, now we were really going out there in unconventional for literary reasons, for artistic reasons. But now anybody who does that, it doesn't ring the way it rang. It doesn't have the same effect. It doesn't impress people the same way. They just go, yeah, it's abstract.
Mm. Yeah. And well, you know what? You're probably familiar with this because you're into the Dada thing. I don't think he was a Dadaist, but Magritte. Are you familiar with the painter Magritte?
Yeah, the apple and the apple guy. Is that the apple guy?
I'm not sure about the apple. I don't know about the apple.
Go ahead.
But he was... I use this as an activity in my classroom, but he painted a picture of a tobacco pipe, okay?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it's a canvas, oil on canvas. It's a tobacco pipe. And under it, he wrote the words, "This is not a pipe." And people didn't... He was actually making a comment about the audience. He was making a comment about people who want the Beach Boys to sing Fun, Fun, Fun and Little Deuce Coupe. He was making a comment about the changing world of art. It was changing into the abstract art, and that people who still wanted landscapes and bowls of fruit. He was making a comment about them. He said, you know, you people, you think you're looking at a bowl of fruit, but you're looking at colors and lines on a canvas. So that he was making a statement by painting by representing a tobacco pipe and saying, this is not a pipe.
That was my father's favorite painting.
Which, the one I mentioned?
Yeah. Of course, my father, he was a plumber. You know that. You knew my father. This is not. And he'd sit there and go,
Jesus Christ, this is not a pipe. I can't use not this kind of pipe. No,
it's a pipe. Yeah, it's not right. It's a pipe. Of course, this is not a pipe. It's
I
not
can't a. It's a sink with this pipe.
It's not a taxi cab either. That's what he would have said. It's a, but not jokingly. Yeah, he's making a statement with by doing. And yet, the pipe was not abstract. It was a perfect painting of a pipe.
Yeah.
He's
saying, no matter how much you like landscapes and bowls of fruit and things like that, they're not, you know, you're not, that's not the thing. It's just oil, it's colors on canvas with lines and things. So get over it. We're moving on. You know, the artists are moving on. We're not painting realistic. We're not painting realistic things anymore. We're painting abstract things. We're painting abstractly.
So what if today you painted a tobacco pipe as opposed to a sewer pipe? I guess they were saying tobacco pipe. Yeah, a pipe, a smoke pipe. And you wrote, this is a pipe. Isn't that also something, or isn't that something, doesn't that in itself have some, doesn't that have some abstract element to it? I mean, if you're looking at it, you know it's a pipe. Why would you write the words? This is a pipe. Why don't you just write the word? Go look at a pipe.
That's not a bad idea, actually. Mm-hmm. For a sculptor, mm-hmm. to have like a plumbing, a big pipe, a plumber's pipe, a drain pipe or something, and put the words on it. This is a pipe. Maybe it's not that good
an idea. How about a T-shirt that says "Take the pipe"? Where did that phrase originate? Was somebody as suicide? Take the pipe. Did somebody put a pipe in their mouth and kill themselves? And they said, "How did he die?" And they went, "You never heard take the pipe?"
No.
Wow.
So there's a phrase bandying about Pennsylvania called...
What's not bandying about? It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
I knew it when I lived out there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, if anybody would know it, then it's my students. I'll ask them.
Ask them about taking a pipe.
Take the pipe?
Take the pipe.
Okay. I'll have to...
Maybe and who knows? Maybe that's Shakespeare.
You know the derivation of it?
Maybe it's Shakespeare. Who not? Right? Who knows?
Could be.
Savino Cotolo Chronicles right here. This time. See, I wanted to keep the Cotolo near the Chronicles. So if I said Cotolo Savino Chronicles, people would go, "What is that? Anything like Cotolo Chronicles?" And I would say, "No, this is a pipe." And I did that so that we could keep Cotolo Chronicles together. But when we were together, it was Cotolo Savino. Was it Savino Cotolo? What was it?
It was Dead Air. I don't remember.
I saw something in on the net, by the way, and that it was some kind of a radio show called Dead Air. But I think they just used the phrase. They didn't use it comedically. They used it as it's hip, and then they played like really weird music. Now, when I said really weird music, but I don't know what is really weird music anymore. When internet radio started, and we were on at Ampcast when this started, I was doing talk, but everybody else was doing music, and there were. Indie people were supposed to be the bohemians because they weren't connected to the great commercial machines, you know. Mm-hmm. And so even if they were doing things out of their home, like garage bands, let's say garage bands, mm-hmm. or indie bands, they're independent. That gives you the sense of bohemian. And yet, you got a guy like Kurt Cobain who's just screaming and yelling there and grunge begins, and he didn't go out there and sing, start grunge today. He didn't go out there and start grunge today. Listen to these songs. Everybody's going to be talking grunge. They didn't. It caught on and became that, and that was considered, just like punk was considered, unconventional or bohemian in a way. And then the styles come into play, everything. But then it becomes commercial and. And now it's nothing. I mean, you can't have a punk rock club, can you? And who's gonna what?
I don't know. I guess you could, but
I guess you could.
You could have a club. You could have a punk rock club, and
even
you could have a mosh pit, and you could order some fries and.
I saw a movie.
Bring them into the mosh pit, and it could be mosh potatoes.
That's a good dance. Hey, today they do mosh potatoes. The movie about the 50s where they were talking about, there were these little, oh, you know what's a great, well, I saw this particular movie, I forgot the name of it, and there's a part of it's about homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they have these very unconventional bohemian, I guess they would be bohemian. If you were homosexual in those days, you were certainly unconventional, certain bohemian. And you would go to these certain clubs that were, it's not, they wouldn't have like big signs out, you know, it's like gaily, it's going, you know, go in, you know, you're going, everybody knows, you could ask anybody on the street. Now it's not just, you could, anybody in the street in any city, you can go, where's the, do you have a tranny bar or something like that? And they go, oh yeah, that's the one down, you know, and they, it's like, this stuff used to be like completely underground.
Yeah.
You had that word of mouth, you had to know somebody, you knew somebody. Now they have websites.
Yeah.
So there's nothing unconventional about
it. It's all out there.
Exactly. And now it gets into, like you were talking about, it just gets into the psychological arrangement of it all. But with everything on the surface, what's under there? What's down there anymore? What is underground?
Yeah. Maybe it's so far underground that... Nobody's aware of it.
It's Chinese. We dig it and get to China.
If we just keep digging, we'll get there.
But from culture to culture, you could find. I mean, you can't if you go to China and you find this family that plays all these weird instruments. I mean, they're weird instruments, and they've had these instruments all their lives, and they pass them down through generations, and they play these things. And to you, it's weird. It's like, wow, that's the weirdest stuff I ever heard. We don't use that. You know, we got Gibsons and Fenders, and we play guitars and stuff. And you're doing those string instruments. And to them, that's nowhere near unconventional. It's traditional. What's traditional in one culture can be bohemian in another because it's unconventional.
Well, you mentioned Paul Simon. When he went through that period of using the African rhythms and the kind of guitar playing and so on, you know, from Africa, I mean, it was actually that wasn't different instruments, but it was certainly a different way of playing the instruments.
And you know what he did with it? It became album of the year. So everybody bought it and loved it. So that can't be. It can't be anything bohemian about that.
Let's use something exotic and make it, you know.
I think we, no matter how we phrase it, no matter how we cut this, no matter how we describe it, I think if we were going to come to any conclusion, the bohemian that Edna was talking, that writes about, that type of person, that archetype or template, whatever you want to call it now, is gone.
I do.
It is dead.
I didn't know where we were going with this when we started, but I think it is. I think it's a dead thing.
We might have proven this once and for all. There are no more. We're going to have to either redefine a bohemian.
Or maybe listeners will tell us where they are.
And they can by just writing to me, fcatolo@yahoo.com. What about, do you still go on to your Ambanami Yahoo? Because I have you up there, but I never see you.
Yes, I do. My Twitter account, by the way, my Twitter is TJ Savino, S-A-V as in Victor, I-N-O. That's my name.
Yeah, follow him because I got a number of people that I've given his, and they're following him, and they come to me and they go, listen to what he said, what he tweeted. So there's a lot of good stuff on your stuff. Plus, once in a while, you do social things too. You put a link to some place, some liberal place where
I did
some stuff is going on. But so you do some socially.
Yeah, I do. I don't know if you're maybe one night when we do a show, we could talk about some of that. I don't know if you're up for that or what.
I'm up for if you're serious about it, but you know, just don't expect me to be serious about it. That's all. We could talk about anything we want, but yeah, we could do a socially relevant. You want to do a socially relevant one next time in June?
Yeah.
Okay, you pick topic then.
Okay.
For June.
All right.
A socially relevant topic from the serious side of TJ Savino, attempting to find anything at all that I could contribute.
Okay. Well, you could we seem to do this. I don't know how we do this. 2 hours and talk about stuff.
It's easy. I tell everyone how easy this could be, and you know, you could, if you just sat here by, and you know, I do this by myself too when there's nobody on.
That's
and
right,
it's not difficult if you just talk what you think. Look, everything is difficult if you, anything is difficult if you're self-conscious. What do they say about public speaking? Number one fear of everyone, anyone has. Right?
What is it? What is the number one fear? I don't know.
It's public speaking. Is among.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Public speaking. I thought you were saying what's the number one fear in the realm of public speaking? But it is public speaking is the number one fear.
Yeah, people just because of what? It's all self consciousness. Well, once you get over self consciousness and you realize everybody, the people are going to say you're an idiot, you're stupid. They're going to judge you no matter what. It's like once you get over that, you don't care. You could just say what you're thinking, and and I tell people, I did a whole show once, Tom, about little radio, you know, people in little markets and stuff, and of course, people who, like when we went to school, you're playing radio, you do things in the beginning that you think people do on radio, right? And you're not yourself. There's no way you're yourself, and you say, and I love this. I still hear kids say this. And they on radio, and now without further ado, when in your life do you tell without further ado you go out on a date, let's have, you don't say it, and yet they feel this is radio. Now without further ado, and it's probably Shakespeare.
Probably. Hey, remember when you flunked an essay because you used the phrase that I know you used to use this phrase, but the professor said, "No, you plagiarized this because no one ever uses that."
I did a show almost on that entire thing, and that was this: why do people talk like Shakespeare? And yet, I got penalized for using amongst,
yeah, that's right.
And yet, everyone, you can't not hear it.
You plagiarized it.
Nobody says a Hmong. And you're going to tell me, I mean, I'm watching like the local news guy. And he says, amongst the people arrested, and I'm going, what is it, this guy ever, does he also say, whilst I was standing outside, thy...
Without further ado.
Without further ado, thy, he doesn't say thy and thee, but he's allowed to use amongst. And I did, I failed Mr. Reed. Remember Mr. Reed in college? Yeah. That was him, yeah. He said, you plagiarized. Because you would never have used amongst. And I went, everybody uses amongst. My father uses amongst. My mother uses amongst. It's amongst everywhere. And, you know, and he's like, no, you know, you didn't. Because
I'm just one amongst many of them.
It's hilarious. Who would have thought that you could get away with certain, what is it? That's not a colloquialism. It's an ancient, what do they call it? A used phrase. It's nothing
just,
old.
It's the way we used to say among. It's just changed to among.
But now it's amongst again. People
is it amongst again? I don't hear many people saying.
I get another title for a book. Is it amongst again?
Is it amongst again?
Is it amongst again? It is. I believe you could look in you want to look at a new dictionary and then look at the dictionary I always use here on this show when we're talking about stuff because I can't believe how people misinterpret words and how they use them. But I use this book. It's the same book I had, and it's falling apart. It's actually a book. 1960, Books Incorporated, the Webster's New American Dictionary. It says, completely new and up-to-date, planned and written by modern educators and lexicographers, especially to serve the essential requirements of school, college, and self-education at home. And this is the one I use. And, you know, you don't find some of the things you find. Now, I know the language is always changing and everything, but that's not changing. I mean, using an old, in other words, if we're going to use amongst, can't we say whilst and thy anymore? Thy, thee. It was great having thee on the show. Thomas.
And thou est amongst my
most no, it's
memorable times.
Perhaps if we walked around like that now, we'd be the New Bohemians. Hey, remember, there's a group called the New Bohemians. And speaking of them, Paul Simon has been married to the head of that, the girl in that group for years now. That's his wife.
Yeah?
Emily Babemi. Emmy.
The New Bohemians.
Yeah. It's wow. Edie. Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And there's nothing new about them.
They're kind of underground.
There's nothing new about them at all. I get more than they're unsuccessful. We've done it again, my friends. Tom will be back in June of this year. Y2K.
Looking forward to it.
Plus, and he's going to come up with, and you tell me in plenty of time, we'll promote it and tweet it and Facebook it and bookface it and we'll Google it and Yahoo it and everything, and it'll be absolutely terrific. I thank you again for your time. I know it could get... you have to make time for this, but I sure appreciate it. I think everybody else does too.
Well, thank you very much. I really, it is fun. It's fun for me.
And we will do it again. We will have more fun as much as you want. And we'll do that. For now, who is that? Who is that?
Who's that?
That's Scatola over there. Oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's him. And this is Tom Savino now saying, here, stay me. I'll just. This show will be available, by the way, for download in a matter of 15 minutes. It'll be on my Facebook page. You'll be able to go and get it, download it. You could, and if you really have some good equipment, you could change what we say because there's no copyright or anything. Yeah, you could go in there, put words there, and you can add to it, and you could talk over it, do whatever you want. You can listen to it again, and you might even find something more valuable than that. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
Once again, and he'll be back next month, June. Take care of yourself. We shall talk. I don't know how you hang this thing up. Oh, I think did you hit the phone? Hey, Ben. Oh, there he goes. He's gone. Excellent. It said excellent. Not that he's gone. Is that perfectly clear? No problem. It was delicious. Thank you very much for that. My name is Frank Catolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show, along with Tom Savino. In this case, Y2K plus 13. Go to CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com. Support all the stations that are playing this over and over and over again. Listen to us. everything we got out there. Pretty soon, we're going to have a place where we're going to be archiving all of them, and you can go there. Tom Savino, thank you. Next week, Brock LaRob. Oh, my goodness. I haven't even mentioned it. Brock LaRob will be here next week. This is going to be another ragged and funny time. Please be with us again. Good night, Mrs. Ernst Smile, wherever you are. I'm leaving you now. What is that? I got nothing more to say.